Yeah, 100%. Maybe I used that in the sense of a bit wrong, but I think
No, spot on, spot on. Here Luke being called a maverick.
I don't know, probably call me Goose after this interview, but like I said,
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.
Hello and welcome along to House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe together with Guinness. I'm Eimear Considine and I'm joined remotely today by Ian Madigan. We are both jointly excited to welcome Ian's Ulster teammate and Springbok with 30 caps, Marcel Cutsier. Marcel, welcome onto the show today.
Oh, thank you very much for hosting me, man. It's always an honour and a pleasure to chat with my man Ian. And it'd be great to have some rugby stories around the table tonight.
I can't wait to hear.
Absolutely. It's great to have you on, Marcel. Yeah, no, it's going to be good. Obviously, disappointing loss for us at the weekend, but we'll be sure to talk about that and your experiences with the South African rugby team and coming back from injuries. It'll be a good show. Looking forward to it.
How did he manage to get you on? What bribe has he over you that you managed to come on the show here tonight?
Yeah, well, I think his timing was very, very good, actually. I just got concussed, and then right after the concussion, he asked me, do I want to be on the show? So I just thought, I'll probably not play this weekend, so no, we'll definitely have time. But he's always sent me links through, and it was great always listening to House of Rugby, the podcast, and I saw you guys at Skalkberg on, which was also great to see him and how he's doing with life after rugby. And it's just from my side a huge honour and a privilege to be invited, man.
So basically you're saying that Ian caught you while you weren't thinking straight with the concussion is what you basically have said in a roundabout way.
Sign the contract.
Yeah, no, basically. no, well, look, the symptoms is going well so far. So once you started thinking clearly, you think, that this could be really fun. So no, don't worry about it.
Yeah, how's your turn to play coming on?
I think we'll take the necessary steps, the return to protocol story with the HIA, So if that all goes well, then hopefully you'll be ready to be in the mix again, it's tough watching the boys play and you're not involved, So no, you're definitely hungry to get out there, but safety as well comes first, and you just need to make sure you're 100% instead of a 50-50 then, no?
Yeah, we were chatting a lot about that last week, but Marcelo is doing some analysis or some research on you before you came on here today, and I've never met somebody who has the exact same birthday as me.
Oh wow.
Yeah, if everything is correct online, the 8th of May 1991, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, no.
All three of us born in 91. How good.
Are we? Oh my God, such babies. Although I was going to say that, but we're all 30 next year, so we'll be lying very soon.
That's been hanging over my head a bit. You always said, when you started playing, you considered guys turning 30 old players, but nowadays you call them experienced players. So now I'll go for that one then.
Yeah. We've got to be more strategic how we speak about our age going forward.
I know, absolutely. Start lying on the programmes, on the team sheets. Anyway, we're going to get stuck into that more in part two, and we'll chat about your future hopes with South Africa and all things Ulster in a little bit. But we're going to start off with our Guinness House of Rugby Hall of Fame. So this week, ahead of the Champions or after the Champions Cup games, and there was lots of exciting games there this weekend, we asked you on our Twitter and our Facebook pages to talk about your highlight of the weekend. And I am delighted as a Munster woman that Len Carmody and Shane Cook both shared great images of CJ Stander smiling at the Claremont boys as Munster won another great penalty. So I'm sure you guys saw that on Twitter over the weekend, the picture of CJ smiling. That must be awful for an opposition team when like he's getting into your head doing that. Ian, what do you think?
Was that CJ? Was that the one of them in the mall and he was kind of smiling?
Yeah.
Like I've spoken to Marcel a bit about this. I'd love to be getting involved in a few more malls because they just look very enjoyable. Like, for the backs, we're out there running around, doing all like passing. It's difficult. You're working your core. You're out in the elements. I look over at the forwards and they're all snug, pushing against each other. It just looks enjoyable. It goes well. Everyone's there, ass tapping each other afterwards. Like, look at CJ's face there. He's loving every bit of it.
Yeah, it's enjoyable when it goes well. But if it doesn't go well, then it's another expression you can give, So, Ian, look, I'll always back you, my man. But Not this time. I'm sorry. I know you do your job very, very well. Let's keep it at that.
Every so often you hear the lads going, yeah, but you're in there and there's people stepping on your toes. It's like, oh God, here we go.
I have absolutely no idea.
The shin kicks in there.
I'd be the person at the back of the scrum when if someone needed like an extra flanker, if someone happened to go off and you needed a flanker, I don't think I'd even know where to like put hands. Like I would be that person that there would be like highlight reels actually made of how awful I would be, even in Imol. Wouldn't even know how to join a mall. So maybe 2021 might be the year in for the two of us to start joining up those malls.
Maybe. Get us on the back of it, dotting the ball down for the try.
Anyway, we'll stop talking about malls and we will mention the Munster win at the weekend against Claremont. I think as a Munster supporter, as a Munster player, I'm still living on the high of that game at the weekend. I'm sure you've heard the hype of the game. They were very, very slow to start. They were down quite a bit, 28-9 at halftime, and managed to pull it back in typical Munster fashion.
Yeah, it was incredible. You know, it was really tough going behind away from home. And I think it's another example as well of, like, not to take away from the achievement. It's obviously fantastic. But, you know, with supporters not in the stadiums, we are definitely seeing more teams winning away from home in the competition than we usually would. But, you know, when you're away from home and things aren't going to plan initially, to still be able to stick to your plan like they did and just slowly get yourself back into the game, build your momentum. And then, you know, quite often we see in sport when a team comes back from a big deficit and, you know, draws or goes ahead, they almost mentally switch off. And what I found really impressive was when they got back to kind of level par or snuck their heads in front, they had the kind of mental aptitude to you know, finish it off. And that was really, really impressive. And, you know, ensuring that Clermont only got one bonus point. What did you think of it, Mars?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of tactics that was implemented on the day, you know, but ultimately for me, being behind with that margin, it just tells you about the team culture, you know, what they were willing to do for each other to come back in that game, you know, and it's little moments like CJ holding a guy up, forcing a penalty, you know, you take that last try with the maul, just worked out for them, you know, that's a time where the team comes together and say, listen, this is a big moment, let's execute, you know, and bang on, you know, they were accurate in their play and stuff, and it's brilliant, you know, for an Irish point of view, a province point of view, yeah.
I've been chatting during the week to a few of the girls in the rugby team, and they said obviously they got such a slow start against Harlequins last week, and that the same thing couldn't happen away to Claremont. You know, I know there's no stadium, but and no crowd in the stadiums, but it's still not an easy place to get a win. I don't think they've ever actually got a win over there, but here we go again. A very slow start, but JJ Hanrahan was superb from the tee. You know, he's done it so many times, but it just showed the patience and the ability to stick to the game plan and just not to panic, just keep taking away the scoreboard. And eventually, Mike Haley got that try, a really good pass from Peter O'Mahony as well to set him into space there. But, you know, it was just the patience that Munster showed to claw back, and they weren't panicking and kicking to the corner and going to try and, you know, get try after try. They were just being patient and kicking to post, which really showed the character of the team and the Munster boys.
Yeah, certainly. You know, definitely signs of the Munster of old. And, you know, they're well positioned now. Two wins from two and away win on the road. And it bodes well for them going into the kind of return fixtures in January.
I think the Munster boys as well, the young guys that came on, like there was quite a few substitutions made for a finish. But, you know, O'Byrne coming on and getting the try, and even Jack O'Donoghue coming on and the impact that they've made, and Witcherly starting. So I think we've spoken so often about the Leinster boys and that they have the young guys coming through. And I think we're finally seeing the homegrown talent that the Munster boys are making. I, as a Munster woman, am very, very proud of that. But we'll move over to your game. This is the second week, Ian, that we're chatting about a disappointing loss. How are you feeling after the weekend?
Yeah, certainly. It's disappointing for us. You know, we could definitely be sitting on 10 points. You know, it wasn't unconceivable for us to score, you know, a late try against Toulouse last week, and that would have been 5 points. And then we already had the bonus point against Gloucester and unfortunately let the game slip away late on. You know, credit where credit's due to Gloucester. You know, they played really well on the day. They built up a lead, allowed us back into the game. And, you know, I thought we played some brilliant rugby in the middle 20 minutes of the second half. You know, we'd gone 14 points down. we had a period in the first half where we only had 13 men, and they came out, scored a good try, and we, you know, still stuck to our plan and got ourselves back into the game. And even watching it, I kind of sensed there wasn't any real panic when we were 14 points down with about a half an hour to go. And we had some great passages of plays, scored some really good tries, and ultimately built up a lead only to lose it in the last play of the game, which was disappointing for us. And I think at this level, you know, at that high European level, any mistakes are really showing up. And the small number of mistakes we've made over the last two weekends have been really costly. You know, what do you think, Mars?
Yeah, you know, it's always easy to speak if you don't play, you know what I'm saying, you know. But I think in the thick of things, you know, I think first of all, the guys did very, very well too. You know, obviously discipline didn't go away with the two yellow cards, you know, and to manage not give up points in that period, you know, was brilliant for me from the side. You know, it shows about our own culture we have in the team. And, you know, and managed to fight back, you know, after the rain set and I saw at halftime, you know, I thought, oosh, this will be tough to get back, you know, because, you know, the game just kind of slows down. You have to rely on moments and such, you know. But, you know, got a bit of John Cooney magic as well from the team, you know, the good continuity play with each other, managed to score another try. So, no, yes, with 10 points up, I really felt very comfortable, you know, in the game that, you know, this can go our way, you know. And it's like you said, Ian, you know, you can't afford to have soft moments, you know. Even the 78th minute, you know, there was a knock and then it was a scrum penalty. And then, you know, it just kind of leads to pressure being built on you. We got a yellow again, you know. So, you know, I think the big thing we take out of the game is we have to look hard at our discipline. You know, it's like you say, we cannot afford to give it away at that level, you know. And it kind of punished us towards the end. But, you know, in general, I would just say, you know, it's one we'll have to take on the chin and we'll just have to reassess and just hit the reset button, eh?
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you. It's the kind of compounding of errors and, as you said, the discipline. But, you know, similar to what you were saying, Emer, about, you know, the positives with Munster, like we've seen, they've gone 8 from 8 in the league and now 2 from 2 in Europe. And it's been great that they've stuck by some of the guys who've been performing for them in the league in the Guinness Pro 14. And it's very similar for us. You know, we've had guys like James Hume stepping up and you know, proving himself at European level again this year. You know, Mike Lowry, I thought, was fantastic at the weekend. Ethan McElroy coming off the bench, you know, he's shown what he can do in the Guinness Pro 14. So it is, there are lots of positives for us to take. And, you know, unfortunately at the moment, we have a lot of injuries in our squad. You know, the likes of Ian Henderson's out at the moment, Jack McGrath, a few guys that were unavailable through head knocks from the previous week, like Marcel and Sam. And then obviously Kieran Treadwell's been out, you know, whatever with a ban. So, you know, there's a lot of guys who are close to coming back. And, you know, for us, we're going to scramble for every point in Europe. You know, there's no doubt about that. You know, we've got Gloucester at home and then we've got to go away to Toulouse. And, you know, we believe that we can win those two games. And if that means we can sneak into the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup, great. But if it means we're dropping down into the Challenge Cup, I think that would be a fantastic competition for us to go after as a team. And, you know, you kind of reset your goals off the back of disappointing defeats. But there is plenty of positives for us to take.
Absolutely. And you'd be focusing, I suppose, Europe is just in the back of your minds at the moment. And those Interpro games over Christmas, you've got Connacht next weekend. Marcel, do you think that you will be fit and able and hopefully selected for that game?
Yes, it will be awesome, you know, just to join the boys again, you know. But, you know, there are certain protocols that we need to follow before I can give a definite answer, you know. But, you know, I am hopeful. But, yeah, you know, it just depends on a day-by-day basis, you know, whether you feel the symptoms again or not, doing some exercises, you know. But, yes, you know, I'll really look forward to it now.
Yeah, there's been quite a few, Ian, you said about the injuries, like not just head knocks, but there's been quite a few injuries in general, not just in the Ulster team, but in Leinster too. We saw the two boys pull out prior to the game even starting. But is it down to the schedule in this year or, you know, the amount of games that you've had to play? Or are they just, do you think is there a link between the amount of games, or is it just by chance that these injuries have been happening?
Yeah, there's definitely an element of luck or bad luck, you know, with every injury. You know, it's hard to say, oh, look, unless it's a really a muscle tear that's coming from fatigue, that you can look at it and go, oh, that's caused from just playing too many games or training too much. But I think if you look back over the last period, the end of last season, you know, the 4, 5, 6 games, that just rolled into this year. So like while we've played 10 games this season, it really is 15 or 16 games. And there hasn't been too many breaks within it. And then as well, for a large part of the Irish guys who are involved with the international setup, there's been far more international games. So it has been a challenging week to week schedule for a lot of the players. And I know at this time, guys probably haven't been doing as much weights and as conditioning as they would usually. So the body's probably feeling a bit fatigued. But look, the way the schedule is, you've just got to pull your sleeves up and keep going. You know, we're coming into 3 crucial Interpro games for us, which are, effectively Irish trials. Now, I don't know how many of the internationals who played in the Autumn Nations Cup will be playing. I'm sure they'll be rested for maybe 1 or 2 of those games. But look, there's no better opportunity for guys to put their hand up for national selection to be playing in those. So, while there might be a bit of fatigue, there's also great excitement and, there's always great viewership. I know we're not going to have the supporters in the stands over the Christmas and festive period, but I'm sure they'll be watching from at home and the players will be fully aware of that.
I know as a supporter, I always look forward to the Interpro games. They're always such high quality rugby, and I'm sure this year won't be any different because, as you said, players are up for selection essentially. But John Cooney is one that, has been playing phenomenally. There was an incident at the weekend that a lot of people were talking about. He went to take a conversion and the ball fell off the tee and then he ended up not being able to take it. So as a 10, can you talk through... one, the rules around that, and two, what could have happened or what should he have done differently?
Yeah, so there is actually a few different rules with it. So, for example, if you're taking a conversion after scoring a try and the ball falls off the tee before you've started your run-up, you're allowed to replace the ball and still take the kick. If you have started your run-up and the ball falls off the tee, you then have to pick it up and effectively do a drop kick with it. What's different with that, with a penalty kick to touch or to at goal, if the ball falls off the tee and you haven't started your run-up, you can replace the ball and kick it. If the ball falls off the tee and you have started your run-up, you're still allowed to replace the ball and kick it again, providing you're still within the minute. So you have a minute to kick the ball for a penalty. So what actually happened with John at the weekend was his minute was effectively just up when the ball fell off the tee. So the ref has deemed he's used the time and he hadn't kicked the ball. So it's a scrum down to the opposition. So it was bad luck. But I think what happened there was because we had the two guys in the sin bin, he was trying to get every second out of the clock before they came back on. So it was something that he can't be blamed for, but it was just very, very unlucky and very unusual that the ball held on for that long and then fell off just before he kicked it. But that's how the cookie.
You would say he planned it, though. You would say,
yeah, exactly. He'd be like, "Don't that kick does not count in my stats." That's what he'll be saying.
I just follow the rules, coach.
He was probably told slow it down, and this is what happened. Now he's got everyone talking about him. But at least he made up for it with the amazing try that he got out on the edge then for a finish. He managed to redeem himself.
John was fantastic again. He's an absolute joy to play with. I thought he had some fantastic goal kicks yesterday in really kind of windy conditions. Obviously, that was unfortunate with the ball falling off the tee. And then he nearly does it every game for us, Morris. He comes up with a big moment. There's nothing really on. Ball spills out of the ruck. He's just opportunistic. He just makes his own luck. Yeah. That's John. But like he does that stuff in training all the time, doesn't he?
I think just he's a player that backs himself. So, he's he's one of those guys, he's like a maverick in the team, he can pull something out of nothing, and you need that player in your team when the games are tight and crunchy. You need a bit of X factor moment. I always think of that Clermont moment in last year's European game where we were so tight and everything, and all of a sudden he just creates something with incredible skill set that he has, and look, it's like you say, it's an enjoyment to play with the man, off the field as well. He's a great guy, always makes time for you, never too busy, and I think people underestimate the big work ethic that he has. He's always working on this or that, and he's really, like I said, a very confident player in himself, and it's just great for him to see doing well, particularly yesterday. when it was also, you know, a bit of tightness and a bit of crunch time, there Cooney does his moment, you know, and you just need those players on the field, definitely.
Well, you say he's a bit of a maverick. You know, there's no one more passionate about the team and wanting the team to win. You know, it's not like he wants to do it for himself or anything like that. Like, John's one of the best team players I've come across, you know, and I think part of what makes him great is his ability to kind of spot those opportunities and back himself to go after them.
Yeah, 100%. Maybe I used that in the sense of a bit wrong, you know, but I think...
No, spot on. He'll love being called a maverick.
He'll probably call me Goose after this interview, but like I said, you know, the thing is with him, you know, whatever he does, I think we as a team just back whatever he does, you know, because if he's choosing to do something, you know, it's a react phase for a player just to make it work for him, you know, and yeah, man, it's just, you know, there was one of the times I'd rather play with him than against him, man.
For sure. And it hasn't been easy for him either with the disappointment of not getting selected again for the Guinness Six Nations this season, you know, and to come back, and he could have gone two ways. Like, anyone could have done, you know, it would be easy just to wallow and be feel sorry for yourself. But he's come back and he has just absolutely proved that he is well capable, and he's done it in every game, and he's been consistently one of Ulster's best players for the last season or season or two, and has proved it day in, day out. So hopefully he'll get a look in into next year's Guinness Six Nations and the Irish squad. Looking back at the weekend's games as well, Leinster were playing. Before the game, there was two injuries before it even started, which is really strange. So Caelan Doris pulled out, and also Harry Burns pulled out on his first European start. So obviously two changes to the Leinster squad ahead, and we just spoke about the injuries. I don't know, was it a knock or what? Was it soft tissue damage? But, you know, Leinster still managed to pull away and get that win, you know, 35-19. Then Northampton were in the game for quite a bit of it, but Leinster managed to pull away in typical Leinster fashion, as they always do. Marcel or Ian, did you guys catch that game?
Unfortunately, no.
I think it's important to note, just like, so people like see, you know, players getting injured in the warm-up. It's something we've probably seen a bit more in the last couple of years, but I think it's important for supporters to know that, like, the warm up, it's not like guys going out and doing a light jog and a bit of stretching. Like, it's full on. Guys are going as hard as they would in a game. Now, not necessarily body on body, but you're running flat out, you're hitting pads flat out. There's bodies going everywhere. You know, it's not inconceivable that guys collide or an ankle could be rolled. So yeah, like, while it was surprising to see them pulling out late, it's understandable to see how it could happen. I think one of the interesting points that came out from that Leinster game was the clear out on Josh van der Flyer. I thought they've definitely missed a trick there, you know, with all that's going on. I think that's something as a player, I think it should be a straight red card. I think that the person clearing out needs to have his wherewithal about him, and if a shoulder does connect with his head, he's got to take responsibility for it and deal with the consequences of it. So I think there just needs to be more black and white on the rules, whether you're clearing out, whether you're a tackler, whether you're a ball carrier leading with the elbow. As players, we need to, you know, realize that if you break those rules, you're going to be red carded.
Yeah, I think it was funny that the TMO discussed with the referee, you know, do you want to take a second look at that? And the TMO was really, you know, are you sure you don't want to just take another look at that one? Like, he was almost pushing it, but I suppose the referee has the final decision in it. But majority of people from chatting, it was a definite red card. Like, Van der Flyer was very lucky not to come away injured after that. You know, direct blow, shoulder to the head, didn't drop his body height, like shoulder to the head in any other game. And we've seen it happen in the past. Is a red card, and a very, very clear red card. You know, you're not going to see something as clear cut as that again. And I hope we don't see something as clear cut as that again. And maybe in future it will be reffed properly.
Yeah, certainly. I've seen it in the NRL, Marcel, with you know, the rugby league in Australia. So you can, each team gets one challenge in a game, and I think it's a fine balance. We don't want players going up appealing to the ref, oh, check this in the TMO, check that in the TMO. It kind of takes from the flow of the game a bit. But I think if each team had, you know, one challenge that they could make, and if the challenge is successful, they hold on to their challenge. For the likes of dangerous play or in the act of scoring, to be able to say, look, I saw this, you know, the referees can't spot everything. Same with the touch judges. You know, I'm very sympathetic towards them. It's a really, really tough job. And, you know, it's easy to look back on something in slow motion and say, oh, they should have spotted this, they should have spotted that. It's an extremely tough job. And while they're doing it, they've got to ensure that they're getting out of the way of the players. But I definitely think there can be more structure put around how the TMO is used and, you know, players requesting for stuff to get checked. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Marcy.
Yeah, you know, in terms of the breakout cleanup and stuff, you know, it's a fine margin, you know, rugby is a contact sport, you know, we want to get as physical as possible, you know, that's one of the reasons I love playing the game, you know, is the physicality of it. But like you said, you know, there are rules and there are things you cannot do. We before the season started, we got addressed by the breakdown law, you know, saying, listen, you can't dive anymore, you can't be reckless using your head and stuff, you know, we have to change your technical tactics, how you approach the breakdowns, you know. And it sort of looked like the refs were kind of strict on it the first couple of games, you know, but a lot of penalties was arising around the breakdown, you know. So I wonder if maybe it depends on the ref, probably on the day, you know, but just whether the consistency is the big thing, you know. You want to play tough, but you want to be safe as well, you know. Not if you're playing against Munster or any of those odds, but like I said, you know, it's going to be personal in a few weeks, you know. So, but yeah, you know, look, as a player, you know, I think the safety is very, very important, you know. And if you have the resources like the TMOs, if you have touch judges that can lend a hand, you know, just more eyes with you also can see, you know, like you said, they're also human beings. Say they're not always going to get it right, you know. Some calls over the weekend as well, you kind of frown upon, but you know, that's why the assistants are there, you know, so make use of it.
Absolutely agreed. So hopefully we won't see too much of that against Munster in a few weeks' time. lots of aggression, lots of hard hits, but hopefully none of that, and no red cards hopefully for you, Marcel. As we're recording, Connacht are currently playing in the sports grounds against Ian's own old side, Bristol Bears. So we'll keep in touch with how that game is getting on. That's it for part one. We'll be back with part two with all things Marcel Cotzier.
If you haven't already done so, click subscribe on House of Rugby Ireland to never miss a show.
Marcel Cotzier arrived at Ulster in summer of 2016 and showed early on what he was capable of. Any progress was ruined, though, however, by serious knee injuries. He had back-to-back ACLs that saw him miss chunks of two seasons with Ulster. However, from 2018 on, Marcel demonstrated his undoubted class and, along with John Cooney, has been Ulster's best player these past few seasons. What an intro, Marcel. Before we get into your time in Ireland,
about that last one, thanks for that one. That's a warming welcome.
No problem. Before we get onto your season with Ulster, all your seasons with Ulster, and your time here in Ireland, can you just tell us about your life growing up in your hometown of Potchefstroom?
Yeah, so I was born in Potchefstroom, you know, and then just before I went to school, I moved to the province KwaZulu-Natal, yeah, which is basically grew up on a sugarcane farm plantation just south of Durban, you know, and which was fun, you know. You had a bit of the farm life, and then also the beach was 9 kilometers away from you, you know, so you better have had the best of both worlds, basically, you know, and just enjoyed it, you know. Just the friends that you meet along the way, and then high school, you went to Durban, high school Port Natal, and you enrolled in the Sharks Academy, and then, yes, you know, just your dream came alive.
It just seems that anyone who's from South Africa, just rugby is part of their life. Like anyone I've been chatting to on the show or anyone in the past, it just seems like it's almost a pathway that it's inevitable that someone from South Africa goes in that direction.
Yeah, no, I think it's kind of installed in our brains very, very young, you know. The first toy I had was probably a rugby ball that my father kind of forced, and my mom was just, let him be, he'll choose, you know. But it's a culture we are very, very proud of. We are South Africans, you know, and we do treasure rugby very highly in our country, you know. It's always personal, and it's just a great, set up for everyone just to come together over weekends. You know, you invite your friends, you invite your family relatives, you make a big thing out of it, you know. You get the braais going, you get your beers as well, and you just enjoy the vibe and the culture that it represents, you know. And for me, growing up in South Africa, you know, how special wasn't it, you know, to be involved in a country which is so big on the rugby, and also the passion behind the Springboks, you know, which has done justice for itself around the world by competing competitions, World Cups, and just series. Yeah.
Morris, obviously I'd heard a lot about you and seen you playing before I was lucky enough to join the Ulster squad. But for me, the biggest thing that stood out for me is, you know, the high energy you bring every day. Like, obviously you're bringing it at the weekend, week in, week out, and putting in big performances. But for me, it's how you conduct yourself during the week, that, you know, the high energy, you're pumping guys' tires up, you're bringing the physicality to training. Is that something that you've always kind of prided yourself on, you know, through school and through the academies?
To be honest, not really, no. It takes a guy for you to, you know, to advise it and see, listen, that's what you kind of bring into the week, you know. But I think in anything in life, if you enjoy what you're doing and you're passionate about it, you can't help to get energy from the guys that you work with, and you just want to contribute as much as you can building up into a big game week, you know. It's probably my biggest energy giver is rugby. You know, yeah, I enjoy it a lot, you know, and taking the injuries that I had in the past, you know, you kind of, I think the biggest thing is you shouldn't take it for granted. You know, every moment we go on the field, you know, we don't know if it's going to be taken away from us and such. And in the case for me, I had a bit of bad luck coming over the first 2 years. And I think in that period, I just realized, listen, take every game and just enjoy it, you know, because, you know, our career span is so short, actually, if you take it, you know, and you must just make every moment count and just enjoy every minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
How hard, Marcel, was it coming over and, you know, trying to make a name for yourself in a province, in a new country, in a new team, and then to do one ACL and then come back and then do the second one? Like, it's a 9-month injury. Like, it's, how long did it take you to come back from either one of those? And did you learn from the first one when you did the second one, like the rehab was the same, or was it a completely different injury all over again?
Yeah, it was really tough. I think if for any player that does a ACL, cruciate, or long-term injury, you know, it is really tough. You know, the road can be lonely at times, especially rehabbing, you know. But just coming over with the injury, you know, you already had a kind of setback, you know, because I think the biggest thing as you go to a new club, you want to establish yourself quite early, you know. You want to show the fans, you want to show what you're capable of because they're investing in you, you know. And I think the biggest frustration for me personally was just that 2 years not being able to do that, you know, and you, it's just sort of a burden hanging over your head because I think my personal guilt felt within me, you know, although it wasn't your fault, you know, injuries happen, it's part of the game, you know, but it's, I think it was just the inner guilt in me of these guys doing all they can, you know, bring you over and investing so much in you, and you can't really reward them for that, you know, and when the time came, just to answer your question, yeah, it was both ACL injuries and also the meniscus that went. So it was basically 3 knee operations in 2 years, you know. So the road didn't look too good for me at the moment, you know. And it was actually a big turning point, the second one, especially when the Ulster had to decide whether they're going to renew my contract or not, because I only played a handful of games at that stage, you know. So, you know, mentally it took its toll, and you know, a bit of bright light came when they said, no, listen, we're gonna back you and we're gonna go through with this, and we'll see where it goes from there. And that just ultimately gave me the confidence saying, listen, well, hey, they're backing me, let's do whatever I can just to get back and just to appreciate the game again and just give a bit of back for that union that's backed me up.
Yeah, like when your contract was up, even after the 2 years, you know, you'd still shown in those, you know, 5 or 6 games that you played, you know, you still showed that you'd still had it, and there was plenty of demand elsewhere, you know, and there was lucrative offers, you know, being thrown in from French clubs that were, you know, everyone was aware of them at the time. But I know from a player's perspective and also from the supporters in Ulster, there's a huge amount of respect for you that, you know, you said, no, look, I'm going to stay here and show you guys what I've got. Did you feel off the back of the injuries, did you feel like you wanted to kind of prove a point and stay around? Was that one of the factors?
Yeah, definitely. I just felt at that stage, you know, it was a big decision for me and my wife to make at the time. And I just looked at the options that was presenting itself, and it was just basically a no-brainer, you know. I mean, you were sort of facing retirement, staring at retirement, you know. And the people of Ulster and the union at the time and the coaches, they just backed you, you know. And they said, listen, we're going to give you an opportunity still, despite all the odds, you know. And that just really stuck at me, you know. It just shows me, you know, there are sometimes a bit of loyalty in the game that we play. With the game going on professional, that was just a huge effect on me. And that kind of made it a no-brainer at the end, you know, when another opportunity presented itself to renew your contract with Ulster. You know, it was just a no-brainer, you know. And yeah, it was an awesome experience so far. You know, luckily you weren't too much on the sideline with injuries now at the moment. You know, you could have given a bit of back, you know, and just enjoyed with the Oaks, you know, because Ian, as you know, as you go to a new union, the only way you can prove yourself is sharing the battlefield with your comrades, you know, and that's when you really learn to understand each other, where he's from, his culture, what he represents, and it's just a phenomenal feeling. Yeah.
At the end of the day, though, it is a business. Sport is a business, and Ulster obviously saw so much in you to keep you on, not just on the field. You know, you're like Ian is chatting to you there about it's not just the stuff on the field, it's everything else. It's you're pumping guys up, you're getting them ready for the week ahead, and it's a lot of stuff. You know, people notice that stuff off the field as well as on the field, and that contributes to the team environment, and obviously you're a very central part to that environment. Your main strengths are your ball carrying abilities. You clearly love the mauls, like unlike myself and Ian. And the breakdown, the carry, the tackle area. What do you see are your main strengths as a player?
Yeah, I think you know, every guy that plays rugby, you know, he's got that something special that he brings to the game, you know, which makes him unique on the field. And I think you know, for me personally, I just love the collisions of it. You know, since I was a little boy, I just wanted to get the ball in my hand. I love to carry, just to be involved in the game as much as possible. If you're not carrying, you want to defend, you know, and if it's a breakdown, you want to slow it down, you know, you just want to throw your whole body basically into the game, because yeah, there's no better feeling of just playing with a bunch of guys that you really appreciate every day, and manage to create big moments and maybe win a trophy now and then, you know, which would be nice. And yeah, no, it's just a blessing. I think, first of all, like I mentioned earlier, you know, you don't really know what you have until you lose it, basically. And for me, those 2 years did a lot of reflection, and just I said to my next step, you know, whatever comes or how many minutes I get, you just got to enjoy every minute and just live for the moment now.
Yeah, certainly. Like Emer touched on it there, you know, you're probably the best ball carrier I've seen. You know, your ability to have late footwork at the, you know, at the contact line, the way you can swivel your hips, and you know, you've one of the best fend-offs that I've seen, as Jamie Heaslip knows well from 2014. But yeah, like what kind of work, Marcel, do you put in during the week, you know, to prepare yourself for that kind of physical battle that you're going into at the weekend?
Yeah, I think as the game is growing, the game is just getting more physical, more quicker, you know, and I think a big important factor we as players have to acknowledge, you know, is our prep going into the week, you know, being professional on what you do building up to a big game, you know. And I think at the moment, yeah, at Ulster, we have a very good S&C team that really looks after you, you know, in terms of conditioning wise, they acknowledge your strength and your weakness and what you need to work on, you know. And for me, basically, it's just being consistent in everything I do, whether it's my power and the gym and the little bit of weightlifting and stuff, you know, sometimes the Monday, Tuesday, the body's still too sore to lift anything. And then you adapt from that, you know? So I think it's so important to have a good communication between the medical staff that look after you, you know, and to be professional about it. And yeah, for me, basically, you know, it's a tough one, because a lot of guys think if they invest too much time in gym, you know, then they're going to be the world's best players. It's not always the case, you know. I think it's in terms of the mental edge that you also have to bring, you know. You know what's working for you individualistic, and not every player is the same, you know. Some guys feed off that. Some guys feed off just rocking up, you know. I remember, you know, hearing a lot of stories about Scott Berger as well. He didn't love the gym at all, you know, for instance. But, you know, give that man a ball and he'll create havoc for you, you know. So yeah, it's just the personalities. And I can name a bunch of guys that I played with, Willem Olbert, you know, he's just a massive frame, big guy. And he didn't look, he wasn't the most conditioned guy, I would say personally, but man, he rocked up and he just destroyed it.
Going forward with Ulster, you know, they've a really, really good Guinness Pro 14 so far. You know, obviously getting to the final last year, losing was disappointing, but you know, Ulster have been proving really, really positive and there's lots of good things happening up there. What are your hopes for, I suppose, the Interpros over the Christmas period and moving into 2021?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing now, you know, obviously the last two results didn't go our favour, you know, so I think the biggest thing now is just to create that confidence in the team again, you know, saying, listen, we're looking very good at the Pro 14 table at the moment. You know, let's make the most of it. You know, what's done is done. We can't really change that the past, even if we wanted to. But I think the biggest thing now is just to get together as a squad, you know, setting ourselves our goals. You know, we've got big games, like Ian mentioned, now coming up into the new year and stuff, you know, and we want to keep that continuity going in the Pro 14. So, yeah, look, it will be a day-by-day mantra basis, you know, just making sure we get the little things right, which ultimately will lead to bigger things. So, yeah, just looking forward to the challenge that's presenting itself. Huh?
Yeah, just talking about the Guinness Pro 14 there, Mars. There's obviously been a lot of talk about the South African teams potentially coming on board in 2021. What are your thoughts on that? And, you know, obviously you've been part of playing Super Rugby and the challenges that proposes, you know, do you think it'd be a good option for the super teams in South Africa to join the Guinness Pro 14?
No, absolutely. Early in my career, I played Super Rugby, you know, and it's a great tournament. You know, you get to compete against the All Blacks and Australian players, which they represent. But one negative thing I could remember from playing in those days is just the traveling factor, you know, the time away from your family as well. You know, it's a month's tours at times, you know, and let's say you get to playoffs or semis in those stages, you know, it is kind of hard to travel with the time zones that you have to adapt and stuff, you know. And I just find, from my personal experience coming over abroad now and playing in the Pro 14, you know, it's a unique competition. You know, you get to compete against internationals every weekend, whether it's from Scotland, Wales or Ireland. You know, it's just a great platform to measure yourself and where you play. You know, if you take the European Cup as well, the top sides of what the English and France produce as well, you know. And you've seen a lot of players over the years that has come over and just develop into exceptional rugby players, you know. And there's a lot of names we can mention, you know. But I think in terms of this whole South African dynamic, you know, I think it will really be beneficial going forward, you know. It's a small thing, you know, like I mentioned, but the travel will make a huge difference, you know. We're kind of in the same time elapsed as well. The rugby, I think the competition will make it a lot more competitive. The South African sides that are joining, you know, those are proud unions, you know. It's unfortunate that what happened to the Cheetahs and Kings, you know, but the unions that are coming in will be great for the competition and just bringing that competitive factor, X factor, you know.
Ian, do you think there'll be a change in format of the, like, Pro 16 now that there'll be obviously 16 teams? And, you know, will it be, like, what kind of format do you think they're going to go with it?
Yeah, I think how it could work. So I think they'll go with the two conferences. So you'll probably have eight teams in each conference. So you'll have two South African teams in each one. And similar to what we would have seen with the Guinness Pro 14, you'll go and play the two away games in a row. And you'll obviously be in South Africa for, you know, for 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks off the back of that. And vice versa, when the South African teams come over to Europe, I'm sure they'll most likely stay for a couple of weeks. I'm not 100% sure how they did it in the past, but the good thing is, you know, we're on the same time zone. I think it's only an 8-hour flight, which is doable if you're doing it. You wouldn't want to be doing it every second week, that's for sure. But I think if you're doing it for two games in a row, it actually provides a break in your own season. It's a change of environment, a potential change in climate as well, which would be welcome, especially dealing with the weather we have up here. So look, I think there's lots of excitement from a player's perspective in Europe. So, you know, there's a lot of positives. And I think we've seen in the league this year, it hasn't been competitive enough. You know, Leinster, Munster, Ulster, all 8 from 8. We need a more competitive league, you know, which will then transfer over to the Irish teams being even more competitive in Europe and being even more competitive internationally. You can't have too big a step from each of those tiers, and there probably is that at the moment.
I think with the time difference as well, and Skalk a few weeks back mentioned about how, like, the fans are the biggest part of the rugby in South Africa. It's like you live and breathe rugby. And with the time difference, with more games, with a lot of South African players playing in Irish teams and in the European teams in the Guinness Pro 14, there's already a keen interest in the Guinness Pro 14. I think this will be really good for the game and really good for the fans, because it will make it, one, more competitive, but also South African fans are probably one of the best in the world when it comes to supporting rugby. So I think that's some really good positives going into the new format of the Guinness Pro 16, as it will be.
Yeah, I think even leading into the Lions toward the summer, you know, if the Guinness Pro 16, as it could be, ran before that, I think it would create great excitement going into that Lions tour. And I suppose on that, Morris, you know, I'm sure you've got great memories of the tour back in 2009. And tell us about your ambitions of getting into that squad for the Lions tour this summer.
Yeah, well, if you mentioned 2009, I was 18 years old, watching the games that took place, and I could just remember the physicality of both sides, you know, particularly that second test up at Loftus. It was really physical and brutaling and everything you wanted as a spectator at the time. You know, it's weird to think that was 12 years ago almost, you know, and now there's an opportunity to put your name maybe in the hat to get an opportunity to represent it, you know. So there's a huge hype in South Africa at the moment, you know. After the World Cup, you know, there was great happiness and joy all over the country, you know, and you kind of wonder what's next now. And then you've got the Lions coming in 2 years' time. So, no, look, the whole South Africa is very excited about it. You know, we as players, I think every player at the moment is just want to be consistent in this performance and just make a bit of noise, maybe just to want to be a part of that mix, you know. Like you said, it only comes every 12 years, you know. So, you know, I was 18 at the time, and then I'll probably be 30 if the games take place, you know. I'm not going to say that too loud now, but yeah, it's like I said, 100%, you know. So, it's a spectacle, and I think it's one of the greatest tournaments or series we can host on our soil, you know. It is the Lions Tour.
Bring us back to the conversation that you had with Razzy Rasmus ahead of the, in 2019, ahead of the Rugby World Cup.
Oh, yeah. Well, so basically, you know, you sort of, at the tournament where the season came to its end, and I went on holiday for 3 weeks in South Africa. One of my favorite places is my guest house there close to the Kruger National Park, you know. Kind of a big bushman, you know. I enjoy that side of South Africa a lot, you know. And yeah, I just didn't hear anything, you know. And, you know, it was 2 or 3 weeks. The day I was meant to fly back to Belfast the next day, I actually got the phone call from Rassie, you know, and it was just so unexpectedly. I had to report to camp on the Monday. And yeah, you know, for not being in the team for a while, you know, and stepping into that format and meeting new guys and old mates like Yibben and Peter Steph and those guys, it was just great to see them again in that setup, you know. And you sort of kind of got the sense as you were there in the following days, something special was going to brew.
Could you feel it from the start that there was, you know, the competition was there, the rivalry was there, the players were there from the very start from joining the squad?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what phenomenal was from that, from being part of that week, you know, is the leadership that we had, you know. Rossi, Jog Ninobo, who's the head coach now at the moment, and all the management and stuff, they abundantly made it clear when we arrived there on the first day, listen, this is what they wanted to achieve. They wanted to win the rugby championship, and then they wanted to go all the way to the World Cup, you know. So that kind of set the ball for a lot of players saying, listen, there's no time really to waste here, you know. You have to do your part, and every opportunity you get to represent your country now, you have to make the most out of it, you know. And I think what helped so well was everyone was on the same page, you know. Obviously, South Africa that had a bit of a dip, you know, years just before that, you know. I think the first thing I sensed with all the players, you know, they were still carrying that hurt and that pain which they went through, you know, and they realized what the other side is from rugby as well. And I think that hunger and passion just showed those coming weeks building up to the World Cup, you know, through the championship and then ultimately led to the World Cup, you know. So there was just an uttermost desire to go all the way together as a squad.
Yeah, there was no doubt that you were going to play a big part in that World Cup. You know, when you got injured, did you know at the time, did you kind of have a bad feeling that you'd done something serious that could have ruled you out?
Yeah, that was a bad one. You know, just like I mentioned now, you know, the opportunity, I think the biggest thing that knocked me, you know, was the opportunity that was given to maybe put your name onto Japan. You know, it wasn't a dead certain everything, and that was the moment to show you what you're worth, you know. And ultimately, I only got 15 minutes when you realize you had that ankle injury that you did and the concussion that you picked up in that game, you know. So, no, look, bitterly disappointment, you know. Especially because, like I mentioned, you sort of felt something special brewing in this group, you know, and what they were going for, you know, and just to have missed out on that, you know, was a bit demoralizing at the time, you know. But yeah, you know, look, time heals all wounds, and it's probably a scar that will always be carrying with me, you know. But you know what, at the end of the day, the boys did it, you know, and the country was in great jubilation, and how could you not celebrate that? I mean, from where we started and how we ended, you know, it was just special, you know, seeing the boys lift the cup there as well. Mates like Eben and Peter Steff playing beautiful rugby and just playing big parts in that World Cup, you know, just made you proud again as well, you know. So, you know, you kind of sit down after the time, you say, okay, well, what's your goals now? What are you going to chase now, you know? So, yeah, it looks like the Lions are on the horizon, you know, so it will be phenomenal to get an opportunity there. But in rugby, it doesn't work that way, you know. It's not scripted, you know. You have to work hard, you have to be consistent in your performance, and you have to work for if you want to achieve success, you know. And I think that is the biggest thing focusing now.
If there's ever a man who deserves a bit of luck, it's going to be you leading into that Lions tour. So we'll all be supporting and cheering.
You're my teammate. Brother. You have to say that.
I'm not your teammate, and I hope you make the Lions tour. So Marcel, unfortunately, there's been quite a South African rugby has got dogged with doping scandals in the past few months, years. Unfortunately, Ralapele and Deanti have got 8 and 4 year bans. Is this a problem that's prevalent in South African rugby, or is it trying to be stamped out?
Yeah, those are very unfortunate instances that happened. You know, I mean, for me playing in South Africa, there was always structures and systems to avoid doping where we can. You know, like they really were, even at school level where I played, they brought in systems and people that talk about it and say, listen, this is not necessary, you know. There's so a lot of other things that you can do instead of this, you know. So no, 100%. It's really a case at the moment, you know, where South Africa is really priding itself on. We wanna stop it where we can, you know. And it's just so unfortunate that sometimes it does go the other way, you know.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And like Marcel, for someone that, you know, is as strong and powerful as yourself, like to some of our younger listeners who are, you know, have the ambition of playing professionally or trying to put on weight or get more powerful or get stronger, you know, what kind of advice would you have for them?
No, well, you know, definitely don't resolve to that, you know. Just I think long term, it's not good for your body, you know. If you do your studies on it and stuff, you know, it's not necessary, you know. You've got so many good stuff out there, you know, the training equipment and good diet plans and stuff, you know, that will help you achieve your goals, you know. And I just think that's probably the worst thing you could do as a youngster, you know. You only have one body, you know, and you have to look after it in as best you can, and don't poison it with stuff like that, you know. You can just see how it affects a lot of people. And no, for me, from my personal view, stay away, you know. It's not always the short steps that you need to take in order to be a rugby player, you know. It's, you have to go the long yards, you know, and that is where working twice as hard as your opponent and just having a high work ethic and just being disciplined yourself, you know. So no, stuff like that is definitely not needed in the sport.
Spot on.
I know when I was playing sevens with Ireland, we got tested very rigorously. It happens in 15s, but not as rigorously, just due to the sevens being an Olympic sport and being involved with Sport Ireland and all that. But we had to do whereabouts when we were, you know, in camp or when we were not there, and we basically had to give an hour where we would be free, where they would know our whereabouts every single day and every single weekend. If I was going home to Clare, I'd always have to let them know, etc. Is that the case for you guys as professionals as well?
Yeah, it's been slightly different for me in the sense when I was playing in Ireland or playing in France or playing in the UK, the testing has been slightly different. So in the UK, for example, they do hair testing. So every 2 or 3 months they come in and maybe half the squad get a sample of their hair taken. And that's really for recreational drugs. So like say cocaine, marijuana, those kind of things that can show up in a hair sample. Now, if you've tested positive, you wouldn't actually get a ban. It would be dealt with in-house. I think you get a fine and the club deals with it internally. It's not seen as a, you know, performance enhancing drug. But I think the testing that we go through throughout a season, you know, if the testers come in on a Monday morning, that's technically an out of competition test. They're really looking for performance enhancing drugs in your system. It's not recreational. Whereas if you get tested after a game, they're looking for everything, both recreational and performance enhancing. So there are some intricacies within the testing, but I think we've seen. I know that the testers have been in Ulster the last few weeks. You know, they've been in three or four times. It is very rigorous, and you know, I think it catch wind of anything untoward going on. And luckily it's not something that I've seen throughout my career of players taking, you know, performance enhancing drugs. So, you know, and I think it'd be very, very hard to get away with it now the way the testing is.
I agree. And I think as well, it's not just performance enhancing drugs. Like, it's something as simple as, you know, you like a protein that shake that's not batch tested. Like, we have to, as athletes, it could be Nurofen Plus. Like, Nurofen Plus in competition is, you would fail. Am I right in saying that? There's some ones that aren't necessarily, yeah, you know, performance enhancing.
Sudafed's another one.
Yeah.
Like Sudafed, because pseudoephedrine isn't allowed in competition.
Yeah.
And it is easily, you know, obviously we're all advised on it, but you could easily make a mistake by buying something over the counter in a pharmacy and think, oh, I've bought it over the counter, there won't be any issue with this. So yeah, for you know, for any young players coming through, always consult your doctor and make sure that you're, you know, abiding by all the rules, because it'd be terrible for something like that to trip you up when you're starting off your career.
Absolutely. Marcel, it's time for the House of Rugby Challenge. So earlier on, we asked you to bring in three items or show us three items, and hopefully there's a nice story behind each one of those items. So the first one was a piece of rugby memorabilia. The second was a jersey that you have swapped and held on to. And the third was something non-rugby that you treasure. So I'm really looking forward to these stories. So the first one, a piece of rugby memorabilia. What is it and what's the story behind it?
Well, I think at the time, you know, you were about to embark on your professional rugby career, and my mate used to train at a training facility where PSP used to train, you know, and he knew I was a big PSP fan, you know, and he sort of managed to get like a Springbok jersey signed for me from PSP just as I was about to embark on the Sharks game. And when he surprised me that for Christmas, ironically enough, you know, I just got this and I was thinking to myself, wow, I mean, this was so cool, you know. And on the jersey he wrote like a verse from the Bible, one of my favorite verses, you know, that your best is yet to come, you know. And that was just before me embarking on my professional career, so that was just something to hold on to and just remember when the going gets tough, you know, words from a wise man, you know. So
it's crazy to think the impact that somebody like a player can have on someone so young. Like, Ian, have you ever been inspired by somebody or like met your heroes, or like who did you look up to as a young Leinster player?
Yeah, actually, funny enough, remember Rog coming in when I was in first year in school. So I'd say he would have been maybe mid to late 20s. I was about 12. So he came in, I think it was part of some brand ambassador he was doing with maybe Esso or Topaz, one of those. But he came in, he spoke to us, he was absolutely brilliant. And I remember getting his autograph and just absolutely cherishing it and thinking this is the best thing ever. Another one was actually Andrew Trimble, from who Marcel would have played with in Ulster. He came in and spoke to us when I was in fourth year in school, so a small bit more mature. So it would have been about 15, and he came in and he'd just gone professional then. He was probably about 20 or 21, and he actually spoke about his faith. He's, you know, a very religious man, and you know, his kind of work ethic and how hard he's worked to get to where he is. And I remember touring with him a few years later and saying, oh, you probably don't remember this, but you might have, you know, you came in and you spoke to our year and you actually had a massive impact. And it was something that he probably didn't think a whole lot of the time, but to give him the feedback and for him to see that he'd left a big impact on us, you know, probably meant a lot to him. So no, look, it's definitely something that, you know, we're all aware of as players, you know, the impact we can have on younger kids coming through. And yeah, you know, I think it's a part of it that we really enjoy, and we're very privileged to be able to, you know, reach out to people and help out where we can.
Absolutely. Marcel, a jersey that you have swapped and held on to, which one is that?
I think the one that kind of sticks out for me, you know, as in 2012, we played Ireland here at the Viva Stadium, and there was an Irish player making his debut at the time there, you know. And I must say, when he first came on and I kind of watched him across me over the scrum there, and I was just thinking, there's no way this guy can be a rugby player. You know, he just doesn't look the part for me. And ultimately, how time I was proven so wrong, because afterwards the player gave me his jersey, and we swapped jerseys afterwards, and we just managed to chat a little bit. Without knowing, a few years later, it will be Ian Henderson being my captain, you know, here at Ulster, you know, and a British line, you know. So, you know, how wrong was I in that case, you know? So, no, look, yes, you know, it just shows you don't judge a book by its cover at all, you know, and he just managed to grow into one of the best players, you know, we have here at the club and in Ireland, you know. And, yeah, it's just phenomenal being captain with him as well. His leadership quality shows. And I think we miss that actually at the moment as well, just that calmness and experience that he brings, you know. So, yeah, I think that is a story that will really stick out with me, without knowing that we would be teammates one day or where the road might lead us and ultimately led to Ulster and us. And we're just laughing about the story now.
That's a really nice story. It's like almost Ian and yourself planted it so that it would be told as a good story in the future. Oh. Was that it? Did you think
didn't talk to him at all this morning? No.
Was that an element when you were making the decision to come to Ulster, knowing that, you know, Ian Henderson was there, or did you even think twice about that when, you know, you thought about his jersey that you had swapped, or did you even notice?
No, to be honest, no. Like, how talks came was Ruan Pina was here at the time, you know, and he just always spoke about how he loved the club and, you know, how they look after its players, you know, and he just loved every minute here, you know, and you kind of caught on that feeling, listen, this could be a really special place to expand your horizons and just show your talent as a player, you know. And when you came over and you saw the likes of, you know, Rory Best here at the time, Andrew Trimble, Tommy Bowe, Ian Henderson, all those names, I can mention a couple of names, you know. It just showed you what quality we had, you know, and still have, and just, you know, what the union means to a lot of players, and to be able to call some of them my friends now, what I've never thought possible starting off early in my career, you know. So it's just phenomenal to have guys like Ian as well to call them friends now, you know. So
very good. He's delighted with that mention.
Yeah, chuffed.
Well, a few weeks ago, Marcel, Ian was chatting about you and his eyes just like lit up. He was just so happy to talk about you. So it's obviously mutual. So it's a good thing. Marcel,
Blue.
Yeah.
Marcel, what about something non-rugby that you treasure?
Definitely, I think I've mentioned it earlier, but I've got a guest house there close to the Kruger National Park there, you know. I'm a huge bush junkie, if you can call it that, you know, and I just love being with the wildlife and the animals. And, you know, I think every time when, you know, the rugby gets too much, or you just need that break away from rugby just to get your mental edge back, or, you know, just do a restart button, that would always be my go-to, you know. And I think if you have to draw a map, it's like 4.5 hours away from Johannesburg Airport, you know. And, you know, yeah, just the scenery around it, you know, is so relaxing and easing, you know. If you're having a braai with your mates or with your family and you hear lions roaring across the river, or you go into safari and you see elephants just walking there, you know, and see wild dogs. Yeah, no, like I can talk the whole day about this particular one, you know, but keep it short. But yeah, just ultimately a big bush fanatic, and I just want to enjoy the pleasures it always gives me. And that'd definitely be my precious, other than my wife as well, naturally. But yeah, that ain't my go-to.
Very good. That sounds amazing. Like, what, giraffes, elephants, wild animals, like walking around? Is it slightly scary though at the same time, or is it just normal to you?
No, you sort of get used to it after a while. I remember making a video for the boys in lockdown, you know, about my surroundings. So, you know, I was caught up in 4 months there in lockdown at my guest house, and it was so surreal when you wake up in the morning, you still had to train, and when you would jog down, all of a sudden a wildebeest is chasing you, or like a giraffe is just staring at you. And yeah, it was just a different element to it, you know. And just soak that in every day, you know. And it was actually so enjoyable, you know, at the time, you know. And no, that's definitely my retreat, you know. It was installed in me since I was very young with my father and my mother. They just loved it, you know. We just constantly went on holidays there together. And, you know, God just blessed me with that guest house, which I could renovate now and give people also that experience now coming over, it's called Into the Pride, you know, on Instagram, if you want to follow it and stuff, you know, it's just videos where you share memories, you know, and the animals get so used to people living around there, you know, you can feed them pellets out of your hands, you know, and it's just so unique being with nature, you know, and I think as Ian will know, I'm a big nature fan, you know, and that's just my ultimate getaway.
Well, Skalk has invited us over to his house, and now we're going to have to tour your place as well. So that's two places in South Africa that we plan on visiting whenever we get there.
Rent-free.
Absolutely. Anyway, Marcel, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on here today. We'll have to get you back on again so you can tell us more about your house in the bush. But really, really huge thank you for having us on. It was an absolute pleasure to chat to you here today.
No, thank you so much. Thanks for the honor and the time, man. You know, I really appreciate it. And anytime, man.
Yeah, thanks a million, Mars. It's been brilliant.
A big thank you to producer Pat, Paul, Dermot, Anthony, and everyone that helped getting this show together today. This has been House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe, together with Guinness. Slán go fóill.
Slán.
House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.